Are you ready to dive into the stories, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Sal Capaccio now on the Wester Hotline. Good morning. It's a beautiful Monday. And the preseason is over, so it is next stop regular season.
Woo!
Actually, next stop 53-man roster.
Then,
to the regular season. 13 days away from Bills and Ravens. Sal Capaccio now on the Wester Hotline. Good morning, Sal.
Good morning, guys, from beautiful Olean, New York.
So it's time for the Coaches versus Cancer tournament again?
Yeah, today. Today's the day. Last night came down here for the great dinner. It was awesome. You know, just a lot of the college basketball coaches, and of course, Mark Schmidt down here at St. Bonaventure University, his wife, Anita, they're the hosts for the 716 chapter of Coaches versus Cancer. Woj is here last night, was with him.
Nice.
And today, I think he's going to be staying to play golf as well. Obviously, he's the general manager. That was great. And Fran Duffy is the keynote speaker tonight after golf. It's going to be a really nice night, really nice day, I should say, of golf and then into the evening.
How's the golf game been lately? You confident?
Not too bad. I think the last time I played was the Jim Kelly Classic, which was a couple of weeks ago, and I actually thought I played pretty well, but the group I was with was really good. So when you're, you know, when you play okay and you're still with people who are a lot better than you,
yeah,
still doesn't make you feel that great about your game as much.
I find that I play better with people that are really good. But I guess it depends
yep.
on the
same
person.
Way. Yep.
Yeah. Like if they're better than you.
I like that too.
You kind of you elevate your own game to get as close to them as possible. So, anyways, that'll be fun. Coaches versus Cancer today. Sal's an Olean. So, Sal, getting to some stuff on the Bills from Saturday and then to tomorrow. 4 o'clock tomorrow for the official cut-down deadline. But as we've seen already, we get reports. We see Schefter had a list last night of the guys that we've already heard about or seen for the Bills. Going into tomorrow, I guess, did anything change for you on Saturday? For who you thought would make this team, or maybe just Tre'Davious White's injury maybe would have played into that too.
You know, I was a little bit more on the fence on Tyrell Shavers, but I just think that it's very hard to keep him off the field. And then I really watched. It's not just the catch, right? The catch makes you go, okay, like this guy, he's done everything. He made a big play in a game. Like that might earn him a spot. Like to me, I'm watching how much special teams is he playing? What is he doing on special teams? And you know, he played a lot of special teams that night. I had the snap counts. I'd have to go back and look. But either way, he was on the kickoff coverage team or the kickoff, you know, blocking unit. He's, you know, covering punts. He's doing different things. And I just think that they're putting him out there to make sure. It's one of two things. Either, hey, like, we don't really know if he can, so we have to find out. Or let's just make sure if we're going to do this that he can do these things. I think at the end of the day, I have him on my 53-man roster. I think that he did enough. In preseason as a receiver and was able to play enough on special teams to be able to do that. So that was one guy for me. I think the Tre'Davious White injury is interesting because we still don't know the timeline on it, right? There's a few different scenarios here, and this ties into what I saw also on Saturday night. So let me just walk through it. Number one, let's just say Tre'Davious White is healthy and he can play week one, which we don't know. I think that is bad news for Dane Jackson. It's probably either Dane Jackson or Jamarcus Ingram fighting for a spot, I think, because I doubt they would move on from Dorian Strong, sixth-round pick, but they could. Could be him. So let's just say it's Dane Jackson. I think if Tre'Davious White is healthy, it probably means you know he's released and then put on the practice squad. We'll see. If Tre'Davious White is out anything long-term, I think you have to keep Dane Jackson. You need an outside corner.
Yep.
You know, because Jamarcus can do it, but he also provides nickel and dime safety and a lot of other things that you would want to use him for. I think the nuance here is what if it's, well, he might miss a couple weeks, but you know, we're going to get him back soon after that. That's an area where, well, then what do you do? Do you maybe release Dana. Just remember, you could elevate guys, right, to elevations, and you could then elevate him for a couple of games without using a roster spot. Would you even consider putting Trey on IR to return to save a roster spot? Mm-hmm. I think that's where I go, and then I watch the game, and Dane Jackson's playing late into the game.
Very late. Yeah.
So I think that could mean two things. Could mean that, okay, we know what happens when guys play late in the game sometimes, that generally a lot of times isn't great for them. But maybe that's good news for Trey's injury because of that, right? Yeah. They're not protecting, really protecting another outside corner.
If it's not Trey White, Sal, like, what would you expect their defense, how their defense would be impacted in week one, week two, if he can't play for a game or two and it is Dane Jackson, or if it is Jamarcus Ingram or somebody else? Do you feel like they're in trouble at the position, or that they've been so rock solid at kind of filling in that spot? Like, it feels like they've had many times throughout the years where, hey, Xavier Rhodes is showing up off the street and playing, or Josh Norman at his age, or when Levi Wallace is an undrafted free agent, that there have been so many times where they've just plug and played a corner, but now they don't have Hyde and Poyer back there, so maybe you would see that as being a little different.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be concerned for sure. I mean, right now it's already a bit of a concern, an area where safety has been, you know, something we've talked a lot about, and they haven't had those two guys available together, Taylor Rapp and Cole Bishop. And then at corner, right, there's always been a question. What is Tre'Davious White right now in his career? And we saw him have really good days in camp and then have a couple days where he wasn't so good. So I think that's been a question. And then you have Christian Benford, I think, who's at least really steady out there and you can rely on. You know, I know a lot of people, you know, wonder why didn't they do more? Well, they did use their first round pick, but unfortunately he's not available. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, they did that. And then they brought back a couple of veterans. There were other guys out there as well. But, you know, now you're in a situation where if Tre'Davious White can't go, that's the thing I would say, Joe. You got to have somebody that you at least trust and rely on. And I know, I get it. I get it from fans all the time. Well, they just bring guys back who know their system too much. Well, there is something to that that they feel comfortable with. And the Bills aren't unique. Most teams do this where, you know, if you have somebody that you trust and not make a mistake and at least get you a baseline level of play, then that's where you turn to. And in this case, it would be Dane Jackson. But I mean, yeah, you're not going to walk Dane Jackson out there and everybody go, okay, we're totally set at the other corner. You're going to wonder, you know, what's he going to do here? Now, I do think that opponent could matter here, right? Week one is the Baltimore Ravens. They have some nice receivers. They're not receiver-centric. They're more tight end-centric, right? They're more of a run team. The one thing I would tell you that Dane Jackson does give you, if he has to play, he can tackle. He can set he can help on the edge, and he can tackle. And you're playing a good run team. Like, that's something you could feel confident in. But I think it's a tough spot here to try and figure out, I guess what you'd say, the roster gymnastics of this whole thing. And the other guy that I didn't really talk too much about is Dorian Strong. Like, do you want to release Dorian Strong and have another team have the ability to claim a sixth-round pick that you just drafted and developed for the last few months and think that, you know, he might be someone you could use over the next few years? It's not just about 2025. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, somebody made a good point to me on X yesterday. Well, you shouldn't think like that. They said, if he's good enough, he's good enough. If he's not, he's not. I understand that sentiment. But look at today, what Tre'Davious White's on a one-year deal. Dane Jackson's on a one-year deal. Jamarcus Ingram, I think, might have 1 year left. Like, you have to have guys in the pipeline that you develop as well, and you have to think about what happens down the road if you lose those guys right now.
Well, speaking of, you know, bringing back guys that they know, yesterday the, you know, news comes out that the Bills are intending to sign Jordan Phillips to their 53-man roster, not the practice squad, is the report that I saw. So if that's the case, Sal, what does that really mean for the defensive tackle position? Because it didn't feel like a position that needed a Jordan Phillips type add this late in the game, considering the suspension with Ogunjobi coming up. And to me, the guy that this spells some trouble for is their third round pick of last year, Dwayne Carter.
It could. I thought about him, Nate. I mean, I don't know. It's tough for me to make sense of it. I think it's got to be one of three guys, obviously, but let's walk through them, okay? It could be for Dwayne Carter, and I agree. Like, he has not flashed, and he played late into the preseason.
Yep.
Let's go back to, though, are you going to bail on a guy that you just drafted in,
yeah,
what was it, third or fourth
round? Third round.
Fourth round last year.
Yep.
Third round last year.
Yep.
Are you going to bail? It could happen. It's not, like, out of the realm of possibility, but are you going to bail on a guy like that who, you know, you just drafted in the third round? He's a young player still. And you're developing. Okay, yes, there's a possibility there. Then I think about Daquan Jones. $5.5 million savings if you move on from Daquan Jones. Right, that's a pretty good chunk considering the Bills right now are really tight against the cap. And if you've seen enough from Deion Walker and TJ Sanders to say, you know what, that's something we're comfortable with doing. And then you have Larry Ogunjobi, which is really interesting because obviously he's suspended for 6 weeks, but he's not going to count on the roster. So you could cut him and save money, but you don't need the roster spot. Like the thing I keep coming back into my head is this. Let's say it's for Larry Ogunjobi. Let's say they decide Larry Ogunjobi is the guy. We're going to move on from him. Is there really a need to bring in another guy in the 53 right now? There's not, because he's not counting a roster spot.
Right. And even if you would see him maybe playing that role later, that means someone else at another position then, right, would have to go. And I don't know what you know, Sal, is typical for them, but them carrying six defensive tackles on the 53, usually seems like more than they normally would.
No, they won't. Unless there's an injury they have to deal with that they don't want to put a guy in IR that we don't know about, right?
Right.
Then you can think about that. Let's just say we find out that, you know, Deion Walker or TJ Sanders mm-hmm. had something happen in the game and they might miss a couple weeks. They don't want to put him on IR to return. Yeah, that could be a scenario, Joe, but it's not something you normally do. To me, you have five defensive tackles making this team as of now before Jordan Phillips signing. Ed Oliver, Daquan Jones, Dwayne Carter, TJ Sanders, Deion Walker. Like, those are your five. I mean, you bring in Jordan Phillips. Somebody's gone. I just don't know where that's coming. We know it's not Walker or Sanders, right? So it's mm-hmm. one of the other three, including, or one of the other four, including Larry Ogunjobi.
Here's my only, I guess, thought on it not being Daquan Jones. And I get the money side of it, Sal. My concern would be you're then turning over a room that you've been trying to, you know, kind of create this changeover to younger players. You're immediately going to be relying on two rookies and then a second-year player at a pretty important position for them. And that's obviously to say that Ogunjobi is going to be back at some point if he's not the guy that they end up moving on. I guess I have a tough time getting to Daquan Jones just based on the fact that this isn't a coaching staff that typically likes to just throw the board at a young player or two young players for that inside the middle. That would be my only hesitation or only thought against a Daquan Jones move.
No, I get it, but I think then you say, well, that's why we bring in another veteran.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Process of elimination on that, I guess. Yeah.
But I mean, well, you say if it is, then you're bringing in a guy that's
true.
Jordan Phillips, they're about the same age
and knows the system. Right? Yep.
Right. So you could look at it that way too, which is, yeah, you're moving off one because you're turning it over to the young guys. What we're all really doing is getting a cheaper veteran who's in here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I did look into it, guys. I think that Larry Ogunjobi's week one, his base salary is guaranteed even if he's suspended.
Okay.
On the roster week one. Okay. But he does forfeit. He does forfeit 1/18 of that salary
for every game.
1/17 for every game that, you know, so that cuts that in half. Here's the other part of it, though. Think about this. However, the minimum salary for a veteran to sign is like $1.2 million anyway, a guy like Jordan Phillips. So you got to guarantee that if he's on the week one roster.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's just really, really interesting what's happening here. And I don't know exactly what to make of it. I just think I've landed on it's got to be for either Ogunjobi, but you don't need the roster spot for him.
Right.
But the money could matter. Daquan Jones, because the money would matter a lot there. Or Dwayne Carter, because you just don't think that he's progressed and you now have two young guys in the system to take that spot anyway.
Sal Capaccio with us on the West Her Hotline. To the offense, Sal, offensive line, what's the biggest question you think there? Is it what they do at center because of Van Pran Granger not really practicing all offseason? Or, I mean, tackle obviously would be up in the air also, right?
Cedric Van Pran Granger almost definitely, to me, is going to be on the PUP list. He just gets transferred to the PUP list. He does not have to count in the 53. So we don't think about him there as far as a roster spot, but you do have to think about who the backup center is. And I think that's probably Alec Anderson at this point. Alec Anderson is just a guy that you know can play a lot of different positions, and he's done a really good job there. So to me, you're going to the season with Connor McGovern and then Alec Anderson as your backup center, and then you get 4 weeks for Cedric Van Pran Granger to kind of get up to speed. The biggest question for me is what happens with both Ryan Vandermark and Chase Lunt. Ryan Vandermark is a swing tackle. He's been in the system 3 years. He's actually started and played well when he's been called upon. He has been a guy here, though, that he's fighting with Travis. Let's start with Tylan Grable, who's in concussion protocol, who had that job last year and made Ryan Vandermark inactive on game day because Grable was the guy. He's in concussion protocol, though, and he hasn't practiced in a couple weeks. He was in a red jersey last week. You also have Travis Clayton, who's in concussion protocol. That's another tackle you're down. Not that he would necessarily take that job. Richard Garage is interesting, too. I think Richard Garage they like. He's been in this battle as well. So there's Vandermark. And then, you know, I've seen, you know, talk that could they move on? Could he be one of the guys that they say, okay, at the end of the day, you know, we're going to trade something, get an asset because we have another guy. Well, that other guy could be Chase Lunt. Chase Lunt played left tackle a lot on Saturday night against the Bucks. So he's played all over the line. As a guy that you drafted, seventh round pick, could you move on from him? Sure. If you do, he's got to go through waivers. You might not get him back. So I think those are things you just have to think about. To me, they will keep 9 offensive linemen. I think the locks are obviously Deion Dawkins, Spencer Brown, Connor McGovern, Osiris Torrance, David Edwards, and even Alec Anderson. I think from there, anything can happen. Tylan Grable, Ryan Vandermark, Chase Lunt. That's who I have. Cedric Van Pran Granger on PUP. And then you have a bunch of other guys that, I mean, a guy interesting for me is Kendrick Green. Mm-hmm. I just don't know if you keep Kendrick Green on the roster, but that's a really nice guy to have, at least on the practice squad, because he did play center a lot to fill in. And the guy was just a warrior. I mean, he was banged up half the time at camp and still going out there and going off with trainers, going back in. So I think Kendrick Green's a nice guy to have. I just don't see him making the roster.
Yeah, he started 19 games at center in the NFL, but he's dealt with a lot of injuries right over his career. And right, that would come down to also, I don't know, would they factor in Anderson in his role as the sixth offensive lineman in this at all? And would they want, I guess not, because if they've been practicing him at center, they would know that they would want him to do both, be the backup center and play on as the sixth offensive lineman.
But Joe, I think Jackson Hawes is your sixth offensive lineman. He's a tight end.
Right. Well, you think they're done with the Anderson thing completely then?
Maybe. I think you could have a scenario where it happens. I just don't think you're going to see it run like you did last year. To me, that's all you're doing there is replacing Jackson Hawes with that guy, right? Which is, okay, now we have a sixth offensive line, but he's actually a tight end and we can throw him the ball. You know, and it makes it really challenging on the defense. So, yeah, I don't think that you're going to have the same kind of situation as you did last year. I don't know if you guys caught the nugget during the game, but Eric Wood said he talked to Aaron Cromer. Mm-hmm. And Aaron Cromer, according to Eric Wood, said Jackson Hawes is the best blocking tight end he's ever coached.
Mm. Wow. As a rookie,
I mean, think about that for a second.
High praise.
I mean,
to me, you don't even need to have, you don't keep a guy as, you don't have an offensive lineman as your sixth guy unless you just have a special package once in a while. I think when you're going to run it in the six offensive line traditional way that the Bills did a lot last year, it's no longer an offensive lineman. It's a guy who has a number 85 and you can throw him the ball.
Did Aaron Cromer have a crossover with Lee Smith? Because he's the first name that I think of for best Bills blocking tight end. In the first instance. No, maybe not. Lee Smith was with the Bills 2011-14 and then 19-20. Cromer is 15-16 and then 22 to present. So I guess actually maybe they didn't cross over. But either way, doesn't matter. That's just the first great blocking tight end that I thought of from the Bills. Sal Capaccio with us, 53-man roster projection. He tweeted it out. He's got his arrow up, arrow down piece at the website from Saturday's preseason game, which was all Shane Buechele, Sal. And I don't think we really are wondering about who makes the active roster, right? Like, that'll be Allen and Trubisky. But what about, like, will they go Mike White and Buechele on the practice squad? Just Buechele? Just what? Like, I guess how will they operate with the quarterback room?
I can't see them keeping two on the practice squad. I think spots are a little bit too valuable, and you have to get reps for guys, right? So, you know, you don't do that. So I think Shane Buechele made a really good case for himself to be on the practice squad. They really like him. You know, his moxie, you guys saw it. I said this so much before about Shane Buechele, and glad he was able to go out there and finish a game. But, you know, I know going back to last year, I heard a lot about how much they just really love his toughness. They love his moxie. The guy just wants to go out and game, right? He just wants to play. And that's what he wants to do. And we saw that was good for him. 25 of 30, 278, highest passer of the week, I believe, in the NFL in preseason week number 3. And the post-game interview on the field, I tweeted it out. If you get a chance, I tweeted out the post-game interview I did with him on the field. It was great. He was emotional because he said it was the first time he had ever played a full game in the NFL, like preseason, regular season. Obviously, he's never done that. But, you know, that's pretty cool for a guy like that. And last year, he got hurt in that first preseason game, never played another snap. He was on the practice squad or on IR all season. So I just can't see them keeping four. But, man, maybe that game forced their hand and they're going to say, let's just do it for now and see where it goes in case we want to make a decision later. But I think that's going to be tough. I agree with you. Trubisky is number two. I've always leaned Mike White as the practice squad guy. I think Bouchel makes it a conversation now. I still think it's probably White, but I wouldn't be surprised if maybe Bouchel leaps him because of that game.
Last thing for you, Sal. Returner right now, how you see that playing out and whether that's close? Because I know Laviska Shenault has done some punt returning this offseason despite never really doing it in the NFL. So how do you think that battle ended up looking at, as we wrapped up the preseason here?
I think Shenault only returned one punt in a preseason game, though, this year, right? I think it was only one. Okay. I don't think he did one Saturday night, if I remember right. I have to go back and look. You guys know where I've been on this for a while. I'm not coming off. I think Brandon Codrington's on this roster. I think he's the main punt returner. Nothing I have seen through training camp or preseason has given me reason to change my mind about Brandon Codrington being this team's number one punt returner. I just think he is. Now, I understand he does not offer much as a defender. Like you just say he is a punt returner, and he is literally a guy at the very end of a game. If you need to get through at the end of a game, you can put him on the field, but you don't want to have to do that. It's just not what his strong suit is, playing defense. He's a nickel corner now, by the way. He was outside last year. He's a nickel corner now. The question is, did Laviska Shenault do enough as a kick returner and other special teams areas for them to justify a spot? And I just don't think he did, because even on offense, he caught one pass the other night. By the way, guys, he also lost contain on one of those kick returns. Like, he was covering the kick. And I'll put it on him, but it's everybody, right? But it looked like to me he got sucked in when I'm watching it. Boy, it would just be surprising to me to keep both of them, and I just don't see how Shenault has done enough to vault over Codrington, especially because I think Shavers did enough. Like, you can't justify another receiver even on top of Shavers making it, right? Unless, I mean, we haven't had the Curtis Samuel conversation or right. Elijah Moore. Unless you feel that Samuel or Moore aren't making it and you want to have Shavers and Shenault make it, I think it's just way too tough for Shenault. And it's okay if Shenault, if you can get him back in the practice squad, you got a returner, a guy who can play on offense a little bit, right? I mean, that's a nice guy to have on your practice squad if you need him.
And even though he was like one of the best kick returners in football last year, say like Codrington, I mean, he looked great in punt returns all year. He looked trustworthy at it. He averaged only a yard less per kick return than Shenault did. So
He could do it. That's right.
Yeah, it's not like the advantage of Shenault over Codrington in the kick return duty was so great last year that you would think that it overcomes the rest of it. Very very quickly on Moore and Samuel, do you think they are likely to make the team? Do you think there's still a question of that?
I think Moore is very likely to make the team. I think Samuel is pretty likely, but I do think that his availability or lack thereof is something they have to think about. He did not make the trip with the team because he was sick, and things were trending well for him, and so that happened. But I do think he put enough work in at the end of camp there when he got healthy and on the field that they feel good about that. It's just, do you feel good enough about him staying healthy, staying on the field? You move on from him, you're taking over a $7 million dead cap hit. Now, that's already accounted for. Whether he's on the roster or not, he's counting for that money. That's already spent. You would save $500,000, but boy, I think right now, as I look at it, I think Curtis Samuel's on this roster, on the 53, but I do think there's a decision they have to talk about there.
And then I'll let you go on this. What's the schedule for this week? Like, when we might find out about an update about Tre'Davious White?
So there's really no media today. It's going to be all roster decisions from the team coming down. We could still like get a roster move or two. And then same thing tomorrow until 4 p.m. 4 p.m. is the roster deadline. We will not hear from the Bills really until probably Wednesday. That's my guess. We don't have that official yet. But generally, Brandon Bean talks to the media on Wednesday. And then not even until later Wednesday, because they got to formulate their practice squad after all the releases and seeing around the league what's happening. So I don't know if we'll get anything until like Wednesday afternoon, guys, to be quite honest with you.
All right. Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. Enjoy the tournament, Sal, for Coaches versus Cancer, and we'll talk tomorrow.
Got to shoot low today. Hey, you know who's in there? Yeah. You know who's here? No, I saw. He actually lives in Western New York. I'm going to blow your mind. Did you know?
Vince Carter. I'm just guessing.
Vince was at the game the other night.
I've seen him everywhere. Christian Laettner.
No, but they see that. You wouldn't be surprised about that. And I'm why is this guy? Right. But we're hanging out with him last night. He's here. He's playing golf. He lives in Western New York. Former Colts kicker Mike Vanderjack.
Because he was coaching. Wasn't he coaching high school football?
He is.
I hope he's coaching.
He is the kicking coach.
Yeah.
I guess he told me he works with Medina High School.
Yes. Okay. I called Medina game a couple years ago, and I remember.
Yes.
That. Okay. Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I remember him. Did Peyton Manning call him our idiot kicker that one time?
Yeah, because he had said something he kind of regretted. He told us the story last night, but without me getting into it too much, he said something he shouldn't have about Peyton, and Peyton said, that's our idiot liquored up kicker or something like that at the Pro Bowl. Something like that. But anyway, it was just interesting. I'm like, wait, what is Mike Vanderjagt doing here? He's from just over the border.
Yeah, Oakville.
Yeah, that's right. But so he still lives in Western New York, and it was just interesting. Like, oh, wow, he's here as well, and he'll be playing today.
Cool. All right, go low. Thanks, Sal.
Thanks, guys.
Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline, his 53-man roster projection. You can read his arrow up, arrow down piece at WGR550.com. Quick timeout when we come back. Evan Lazar on the Patriots, 14 teams in 14 days when we come back here on WGR.
Are you ready to dive into the stories, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ready to go, and then he helps and helps our offense, and then he helps Drake. And again, I think that they're building a connection. I think that we've played a lot of different receiver combinations, and I think that that's been good, whether that be in the red zone yesterday or in the 2-minute drive, and you know, guys are rolling in there and kind of finding a role. And so again, I think the expectations are high for all of us, whether it be Steph Diggs or Drake or me or Kyle Williams or anybody out there. The expectations, this is professional football. So, but his attitude's been good. He's had a willingness, and I've decided to keep him out of those preseason games that you mentioned.
That is Mike Vrabel, head coach of the New England Patriots. A few minutes on New England. Evan Lazar, our buddy from out in Boston, joining us now on the Wester Hotline. 14 teams in 14 days, rolling through the Bills' opponents, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Get a Northtown Engine Shield engine protection warranty on new and used vehicles. Evan, it's Joe and Nate. Thanks for hopping on this morning.
Anytime, guys. How are we doing?
Pretty good. Evan from Patriots.com, host of Patriots Catch 22. What's the biggest question about New England going into roster cutdown day tomorrow? And is it the receivers? Because it feels like there's a lot of guys that could make the team, but I wonder from you how that's looked throughout camp and preseason.
Definitely. That's one of the spots that we're all looking at. Do they keep all seven of the guys that have maybe competed for roster spots so far here this summer? Do they keep six? And a guy like Javon Baker, a draft pick last year, might be the odd man out there. So I hesitate to say that it's a deep room, because I think there's still questions about top-end talent in that room. But it is a high-volume room in terms of numbers of guys that could make the team. So it's one of the spots. But I think in general, just looking across the roster, it's only been one off season with Mike Vrabel and this power structure in New England. So the depth is not exactly where they need it to be just yet. They've improved the top half of the roster. I think everybody can see that. But I do think they're going to be active in trying to improve their depth behind their frontline guys.
Was Jalen Polk going to be safe? He's injured now, right? So was there ever going to be a decision to be made about him, second-round pick from last year? Do you think he was going to make the team regardless?
I don't think he was going to make the team, to be honest with you.
Okay.
He's had a rough summer injury-wise, started off injured to start camp, then got healthy, practiced for a little bit, then got hurt on the very first touch that he had in the preseason with that shoulder. So I don't see a path for him making this team if he did stay healthy. Now, it's helpful for him and helpful for the team in some ways that he's going to go on IR, because it gives him one more chance next summer to carve out a role. But it was going to be an uphill battle for him.
Let me ask you about Travion Henderson. I think he's sort of been the talk of training camp and of the preseason. He's looked good. I mean, his first touch he takes for a kick return touchdown. Admittedly, I do this a lot when I'm in here. I ask fantasy questions because I'm always interested in what, you know, opposite, you know, people that cover other teams. Let me ask you, what's the room look like? I mean, he is flying. It's draft season now, flying off draft boards very early. Are we looking at a full committee? I mean, you still have Antonio Gibson outside of Ramondre Stevenson. Is this he's a rookie, they're going to slow play him, but by the end of the season, he's kind of the feature back? Or do you expect this to be a full committee approach?
I definitely expect to see a full committee approach. I know that drives the fantasy community nuts, but it just is what Josh McDaniels has always done with his running back outside of a few exceptions. You know, Josh Jacobs in Las Vegas comes to mind, but like Josh Jacobs is a different back in terms of how he's built, right? Like he's a different body type than Travion Henderson. And Travion Henderson had some durability issues at Ohio State until his last year there with Quinshon Judkins kind of splitting the carries with him. So I think the goal for New England with their running backs is to have something similar to what they have going on in Detroit, which is, you know, Ramondre is sort of like the David Montgomery, and then Travion Henderson is the Jahmyr Gibbs. So there's a straight platoon, I would think, between those two guys. And then if Ramondre's struggles and his fumbling issues continue into the season, then maybe Antonio Gibson is the other half of that platoon with Travion Henderson. Like, don't get me wrong, Travion Henderson is going to play plenty. He's going to get plenty of opportunities. But I would say that right now he's a 10 to 12 touch a game guy. Now, it could be 10 to 12 touches and he could average 11 or 12 yards per touch. And, like, the production might still be there because of how explosive and just how dynamic he is. But I don't think that they're going to use him at a super high volume to start.
Stevenson's had fumble issues in the past, too. If that starts coming up, maybe that could play a factor in that room as well. Evan Lazar with us from Patriots.com. Drake May, has he looked any different from last year? How sharp has he looked in year two, training camp, preseason, heading into his second year?
Yeah, I think that he's looked improved, but I don't think it's been an improvement by leaps and bounds just yet because he is learning a totally new offense under Josh McDaniels, and an offense that really asks a lot of different things from the quarterback compared to what they asked of him last year. You know, there's a lot more on his plate at the line of scrimmage now, similarly to what it's always been with Josh Allen. You know, it's a similar system where the quarterback has a lot of say at the line of scrimmage pre-snap, and then post-snap you're reading coverage and coverage shells and things like that instead of maybe just like straight progression reads through, you know, 1, 2, 3. So I would say in general, like there's more on his plate this year, which has maybe led to some growing pains adjusting to this offense. But there's no question every time you watch Drake May throw the football, whether it's practice or the little bit that we've seen in the preseason, that the talent, you know, the physical talent is unquestioned. There's no doubt that he has all the physical talent in the world to be a franchise quarterback, but kind of like your guy early on, it's just a matter of can he put it all together and can he be consistent play to play with his mechanics, with his accuracy, with his decision making.
One thing that I guess has surprised me, Evan, coming out of training camp and throughout the preseason is Kyle Duggar. You know, they signed the safety to a contract extension last offseason, a big one at that. And now it's the rumors are that the Patriots are trying to shop and trade him. What exactly happened? Just players behind him elevating or new regime and, you know, maybe not their type of player?
I would say it's more that, more the latter there in terms of the new regime and the new coaching staff. He did have ankle surgery in the off season, so there has been some chatter about him bouncing back from that surgery a little bit slower than maybe you would expect from an ankle injury. So it's taken him a little while to get 100% healthy. But at the same time, I think the bigger thing here is what they ask of their safeties in a Mike Vrabel defense and a Terrell Williams defense is significantly different than what Bill Belichick and then, you know, by association, Gerard Mayo was asking of the safeties, mainly that they are wanting their safeties to cover a lot more ground in the back end in coverage. And they are going to want those guys to be rangy, to be able to cover man to man against tight ends. you know, like that sort of thing. Whereas in the old Belichick system, you're kind of like a hybrid safety, they would call them, where they're almost pseudo linebackers at times. So that allowed a Kyle Duggar to play in the box and play physically and come downhill at the line of scrimmage and be more of an aggressive player. Whereas in this defense, I think you're going to be more, let's keep the top on the defense. Let's play up top, you know, post safety, split safety coverages and range over the top. So they have Craig Woodson, their rookie, who they really like. They drafted him in the fourth round. Jalen Hawkins, a veteran player that's been kicking around. And then so far right now, Jabril Peppers is ahead of Kyle Duggar on the depth chart. So that's sort of how you get to where we've gotten with Kyle Duggar. You know, last thing on that, I would just say with Peppers, like they're a little bit redundant. You know, Peppers and Duggar are similar players. They both belong closer to the ball. So if you have two of those types of guys, then, you know, are they able to play together at a good level? And I think the Patriots coaching staff this year has decided that they really only want one of those guys on the field at a time.
Quick follow-up on that. If they can't find a trade partner, do you think they'll cut Duggar?
You know what? I don't. I think the main reason is I really feel like they're one offseason away from being able to turn over the roster in that respect. I think there are a handful of guys that fit the old defense in particular, Duggar, Anthony Jennings, Jelani Tavai, who probably aren't in the long-term plans for Mike Vrabel. But if you cut those guys, then you're just losing NFL talent on a roster that isn't incredibly deep. So I think that they probably hang on to a bunch of those guys for one more year. Worst case scenario, they're just like injury replacements, and if they have to play them, then you tweak things. I just don't know if they're in a position to be cutting players like that, and then you get to a point where they have a rash of injuries at linebacker or safety. You're playing, you know, guys that are really probably belong on a practice squad somewhere.
Right, and at the moment, it looks like they have the most cap space in the league, so it's not like they need the money for it. And next year, it looks like a Duggar release would be more appetizing anyway than it would right now for money, even for next year.
100%, yeah.
Yeah. Very last thing for you. Nate said today, revealed that he's seen the town 20 times. Have you seen the town less than 20 times? I'm guessing yes.
I've seen it less than 20 times, but okay. I've seen it a pretty good amount of times. I will admit, I mean, not as many as Joe Mazzulla, but definitely
right.
I've seen it a few times.
Right. Four times a week or something, he said. Or five, I don't even remember.
How does
every
an
day?
NBA head coach have the time in his schedule he to wasn't watch the being town? Literal. It's not a short movie.
He wasn't being literal then, right?
I don't no think way. He was. No,
I don't remember.
No. He said that they force him to watch movies to get him to stop watching tape.
Right.
Because he's like maniacal about studying opponents and stuff like that. So
yeah.
The coaching staff was like worried about, like legitimately worried about his mental health. At different points, so they were like, no, we're going to mix in a movie from time to time to get you to stop working, and so that's how the thing with the town started. But he's actually at Patriots practice a couple of weeks ago with his son, who plays football here for a high school in New England, and actually plays outside linebacker, same position as Mike Vrabel. So he was getting some pointers from Vrabel on the sideline during practice, which was pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, he's got a season coming up. I'm sure the hot take machine is ready to get fired up on the Celtics season in Missoula, depending on how that goes. But we'll see. I might even like a sneaky bet on them to win the East. We'll talk about that later.
Okay.
We don't have time right now for that.
As a Knicks fan, that you just triggered.
Yeah,
me,
so I'm just messing with that, Nate. Yeah. Thanks, Evan, as always. We'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Evan Lazar on the Western Hotline. You don't like my Celtics pick? The East stinks. You know, part of my Celtics take is it's more hate for Jason Tatum anyway. They won the title without him, basically. He was like the fifth best player during the finals.
Yeah, he wasn't. Yeah, I'm not
so
a
what,
huge...
they can't win it without him now?
They, no.
They got rid of some other guys. Doesn't
yeah,
matter.
But they got there so far in else. Large part because of Tatum, though. Yeah. So.
Time out here. When we come back, maybe a quick follow-up on that Kyle Duggar situation.
Yeah.
Does that feel like it's a place we want to poke around?
No.
Kyle Duggar, safety?
Not for 4 years at $58 million. I mean, it's just so much money. It's so much money.
803-0550 is the phone number. Jody Biasi, Nate Geary here on WGR. Be caller 5 right now at 716-221-4WGR to win a pair of tickets to the National Buffalo Wing Fest. Saturday, August 30th, 5 days from today, this Saturday, and also this Sunday, plus two Wing Fest t-shirts, courtesy of Buffalo Wing Fest. For event hours and tickets, visit buffalowing.com.
Are you ready to dive into the stories, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. It's Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy's off today. Nate is in. And we just talked a little bit about the Patriots with Evan Lazar. If you missed that, check it out on demand or you can go back in the YouTube stream. Also, from yesterday, we talked about the Tommy Fleetwood win, which is great for him.
And golf.
Is there another golfer that doesn't have a win that we're thinking about for that?
Cam Young won recently, so he's...
Yeah. Like, what's the next golf chase? Rory got his major.
Yep.
Fleetwood got his win. I'm not thinking about, like, Fowler winning. He's so far away from that right now.
Spieth? Getting back?
The career Grand Slam? He needs one more. What does he need?
He needs Masters.
No, he has the Masters, doesn't he?
I thought he had...
He won the Masters.
He has the U.S. Open.
He doesn't have a PGA Championship.
Really?
Yeah, he has the Masters.
I knew he had the Open. Yeah,
he's kind of like Fowler. He's probably doing better than Fowler, but he's not in contention in these majors, right?
Is the next big thing Scotty going for the Grand Slam? And could
in
he
one
do
year?
It? Could he do it? And
I don't know. I heard actually Bryson DeChambeau in an interview say he got asked that question. And he said it's so hard with how good the fields are now that I would not expect to ever see a Grand Slam in my lifetime. He's like, as long as I live, I bet you I won't see someone win four in
Open.
1 year. Oh, you mean career Grand Slam?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, career Grand Slam.
I thought you meant four in 1 year.
I also agree with Bryson. I don't think so.
Tiger didn't do it. He won four in a row, but they weren't all in the same year.
Correct.
Yeah, Spieth at majors. Spieth is not finished.
Outside the top 20 and like...
He's got one top five in his last 3 years in majors. He's missed the cut three times.
Scheffler?
No, this is Spieth.
Oh, yeah. Spieth
for career Grand Slam. Like, I know he's one away, but the one he needs, the PGA Championship, here's his last 5 years. Cut, 43rd, 29th, 34th, 30th, 71st. He hasn't been close.
No.
2019, he finished third.
I'd like him to get back to it.
I don't really like him. I don't know if I need
really?
Him. Really? Spieth?
Oh, man, I love Spieth.
He's kind of a crazy person.
Yeah.
But he's also a jerk, right?
Is he?
Little bit. No, he's always yelling at his caddy.
No,
he's mean to his caddy.
Michael Greller and him are boys. They're very they have a lot of back and forths.
Mm-hmm. The way like what Jordan was to Steve Kerr, which he punched him in the face.
Well, I mean he's not punching him in the face, but
not that we see.
What am I watching?
You'd get kicked off the tournament, right? For that. If you punched your caddy
in the face,
I think you'd be removed from the tournament.
Having said that, Wyndham Clark did deface Oakmont's locker room.
Well, he got banned.
He did get banned.
So,
but he has a path to return if he takes counseling and does a bunch of other weird stuff.
Yeah. Which I don't know if he'll do.
Wyndham Clark.
803-0550 is the phone number. If you've got a thought on the 53-man roster or you got a question about a guy, feel free to get in. Tyrell Shavers with the one-handed catch on Saturday. Jordan Phillips is going to show up, it looks like, and I have no idea who that's going
well,
to
that's gonna look
be
like
bad
either.
News for. Yeah. We'll see. Jody Biasi, Nate Geary here on WGR.
Are you ready to dive into the stories, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.